Welcome to the Uplift Chronicles, where we journey through the powerful stories of those who inspire, uplift, and make a difference. I am your host, Kofi Dake. In each episode, we dive deep into the lives, accomplishments, and the diverse backgrounds of remarkable individuals, particularly those of Afro heritage, who are changing the world one story at a time. Whether you are seeking motivation, connection, or a celebration of culture, you are definitely in the right place. So sit back and relax, and let's explore how lives have been uplifted, both in Africa and across the globe. This is the Uplift Chronicles.
Our special guest today is Dr. Eunice Gwamisia. Welcome to the Uplift Chronicles, Doctor.
Thank you so much for having me, Mr. Kofi, on your platform.
Yeah, thank you for actually taking the time, and it's a pleasure and honor to have you here. I'll dive in into and speak of your biography, and then we'll jump into the questions. Welcome again.
Awesome, thank you.
All right. So Dr. Eunice Gwamisia is a transformative leader and a passionate advocate for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, abbreviated DEIB. She is the founder and CEO of Unity Solutions, where she partners with executives and organizations to develop inclusive cultures that foster innovation, leadership, and a true sense of belonging. Drawing from her lived experiences as an immigrant and her extensive work in DEIB, Dr. Gwamisia has made it her mission to address the challenges of cultural responsiveness and representation in the workplace. In recognition of her commitment to service and community leadership, she was honored with the Presidential Lifetime Achievement by President Joe Biden in 2022. Great accomplishment. Having contributed over 4,000 volunteer hours to community initiatives, beyond this accolade, she is a wife, mother of two, and a dedicated nurse with extensive healthcare experience. Dr. Gwamisia is a member of the American Nurses Association and the Delaware Nurses Association. She holds a Doctor of Philosophy in Nursing from the University of Phoenix, as well as a Master of Science in Nursing and a Master of Science in Healthcare Administration from Wilmington University. A sought-after international speaker, nurse educator, consultant, and coach, she has delivered keynotes globally on DEIB, leadership, and empowerment. In 2023, she became an award-winning best-selling author with the release of her book, The Power of Your Identity. Through Unity Solutions, she equips organizations with the strategies to unlock their workforce's potential and drive sustainable, inclusive growth, serving as a champion for the marginalized voices. She remains deeply committed to advocating for equity, empowering women, and embracing the strength found in the cultural diversity. Quite impressive biography.
Thank you so much for that kind introduction.
Thank you. So I read one of your books, and at a summit which you're attending, and I found a book on one of your decks. I read it, and I fell in love with the book, to be frank, and I almost read half of the book during the summit, just in a corner somewhere. So the title of that book was Cultural Awareness, a Strategy That Can Influence Your Journey to Success. And I deemed it imperative to adopt that title for our conversations here today. So I think we're going to dive into some of those questions, and then you can help us understand a lot of things about this book, and then also more about you.
Awesome.
So, yes. So you dedicated your book to your children who have gone to be with the Lord, and then your other two children, Keith and Kathleen. Do you want to talk more about this? We can also leave it for readers on pages 17 and 18 in chapter one of this book if you don't want to talk about the first two children.
That is a sensitive question. However, there is no problem in us talking about it. I thank you for that question. But I also, first and foremost, like to thank you for having me on your platform again. I feel honored to be a guest on your podcast. So to answer that question, I did dedicate this book to my children who have passed on, and also to my two living children, Keith and Caitlin Gwamisia. And to answer your question, it is deeply a personal aspect of my life. However, I do believe that sharing one story and sharing your lived experiences can, however, inspire and hopefully help someone who may be going through a similar problem or maybe had gone through a similar problem but haven't really dealt with their situation. So I absolutely do not have a problem answering that question. So in my case, having had been pregnant for 7 times, but only truly have 2 beautiful children, whom I call my miraculous children, is indeed a blessing. And going through that process, it dawned on me that sometimes we ask questions, why me? When in fact, God positions us at times in our lives to be a testament for others. At the time, you mentioned page 17 and 18 of my book. Readers can read that, but just a little bit of what is in those pages, I really just share my journey with my very last pregnancy of when I had a stillbirth. Arriving the hospital, what the doctors were doing at the time, and me ending up having that DNC to evacuate the child that had already passed on. But in the middle of that grieving process, at the moment, you're going to go through that deep pain, which is what I felt. But the grieving process itself, you're asking all of those questions. You're probably so hurt because it is deep pain and no one can describe it. Because we all go through that grieving process in our own different ways. We all don't handle grief the same way. However, the important lesson that is learned through this is what we always say, that failure is not the problem. That grief is not the problem. It's how we get through that grief, which is the lesson that I have personally learned, is that in that process, whether you're present in the moment or it's afterthought or after the reflection, is what you take from it. And what I have taken from it is this. There is a reason why you go through what you go through in life. And those reasons are best known to you. And the lessons that you internalize from that circumstance, from that challenge, is what benefits who you are in the long run. For me, it's pain to purpose. That pain was deep at the time, but I survived it. I got the wisdom from it. And anyone else, to your listeners, to your viewers, anyone who is going through it, who had gone through it and hasn't fully recovered from it and still maybe going through those grieving stages, because we all go through those stages, is 6 grieving stages back and forth, and haven't dealt with it. I just want to reassure them that there is hope and they can find peace at the end of it. But give yourselves grace. Give yourself some time to go through it. But most importantly, don't beat yourself up. There is a reason why you're going through it, but just be patient and seek help when you can to go through it. But take those lessons through that process and listen to that inner voice in your head. What is it telling you? Because God has a message for you through that grieving process. And that is what I learned through mine, because now Keith and Caitlin continue to bring me joy and the purpose for my journey. And, you know, in the blend of that sorrow, it has shaped who I have become today. And that's just who how I approach life today, receiving joy from my two beautiful children.
Yeah, that's an impressive story. And thank you for sharing. Actually seeing death of loved ones is not natural. And my sympathy goes to you and your family on that. But I'm glad you're able to move on and also inspire other people wherever you meet. So in chapter one, the chapter was based on a question that you put out there, which was, does anyone even care? Yeah, so when I read it, that it really intrigued me. So, and then you actually went through many challenges, which in part triggered that question. So what was your mindset at this point of your life?
Absolutely. That's a very good question. So when I asked that question, does anyone even really care? Moving from Cameroon to Canada and Canada to the United States of America, there was a story that actually took me out of Cameroon. Growing up in Cameroon, you know, as you can tell from the book, I was really daddy's little girl. And growing in Cameroon, I always wanted to be a teacher like my father. But unfortunately, you know, at our young age, teenagers, we do what we want to do. We think we're grown, right?
Right.
And so I really, in my high school years, which we call back home college, really, you know, high school, at if you have the British system in high school, I wanted to graduate and go to the university. But knowing quite well that Cameroon is a bilingual system, I had to study French. But, you know, at that age, you're doing what you want. My parents didn't know I wasn't going to French classes. I really focused on playing my sports because I was the team captain or the sports prefect, we call it back in Cameroon.
Yeah.
And so I would skip those classes and do my thing that I was doing. Like, I thought I was big and know what I was doing. And so after I finished and went to the university, needless to say, universities were taught in French. Of course, I saw that as someone else's responsibility, and I ended up failing out of the university. And that was my first awakening to becoming culturally responsive. And as a result, I failed out of college. So, but my parents, being who they were able to send me to Canada because they were not just going to let me be without an education. And so arriving in Canada, it dawned on me, though, that, you know, this sense of isolation, you know, moving from this rural area in Cameroon to Canada and then to the United States was a stark difference. So here comes the cultural shock and the physical shock. Because in my mind, the cultural shock is that moment when you realize the stark difference between your own environment where you're used to being to this new environment. And the physical shock is that change in the weather. You know, your body's not used to it. I came from a sun-soaked Cameroon to this chill weather in Canada and then to the United States. I never knew anything about winter. But also what I found was the isolation. People, your closest neighbor in a rural area, is you can just walk to your neighbor's house and chat anytime, right? But coming to the U.S. from Canada, from Cameroon to Canada, it was pretty much similar because I was in a very small place in Canada. But coming from Canada to the Washington, D.C. area, everybody mind their business. And I just felt like I was dumped in this huge city. And especially going through the train stations and people, I just felt like people were stepping on my toes. And so I had this, felt this sense of anxiety, sense of isolation. And so it was just like, wow, does anybody really care? You know, and
right, and actually, I have more questions on that cultural awakening or a cultural shock as we go along the line. But I could see and read also, and from your description that you came from a structured home in Africa, where you have your dad and mom and three brothers and two sisters. I think you were the first out of the five siblings. Okay, and you hailed from a tribe called Unso, if I pronounce it correctly, in Cameroon. But there was an interesting quote that you would say. They say, and I quote: "If you have a problem, take a look at yourself in the mirror. The solution to that problem starts with you and no one else." I like this quote in your book. Can you elaborate and can you tie it down to the first challenge that you had when you failed due to a language barrier?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So quick correction, I am actually the first of six. But okay. My siblings will tell you that I'm the first of seven because the one of the grandkids refused to be called the grandchild because he sees himself as the last the last child because there's this ongoing fight in the family, but he will not be called the grandchild. He wants to be the child. So.
Nice.
Yes. So anyhow, yes, I did grow up first of family of six or seven now. And so it was quite interesting growing up with mom and dad. And daddy always told us, the quote you're talking about, if you have a problem, you look at yourself in the mirror and the solution to that problem begins with you. Mm-hmm. And he always reminded us as well that if you want change, that change starts with you, right? So I use that quote a lot because there's no time for a pity party. Mm-hmm. If you do not look at yourself and start with you, and reflect and internalize what the problem is, how can someone else help you resolve that problem?
Right.
It's got to start with you. And that's why I really wanted to put that quote in the book so that we can begin to shift our mindset to start taking responsibility and ownership for what our problems are. Because when you do that and you define what your values are and how you want to be treated, then others also show that respect. Not that you're dictating to people. However, when you take ownership and responsibility, how you show up in the world matters. Yes. And people can start to understand that, oh, wow, this is your mindset, but this is how we can relate. And that's where also that cultural sensitivity and cultural awareness comes into play. Because if you do not demonstrate who you are, then we don't understand who you are and why you behave in certain ways. And that is very important when we're trying to raise awareness of who each other is, especially when we come into a community together, we have to understand one another. So that really comes into play in that aspect, especially when we're trying to understand and work with one another so we can become more inclusive.
Right. So when you had that challenge in the university due to ineloquent in French, how did you navigate through that challenge? Obviously, you recognized the problem and you looked at yourself and then you say, okay, this is my challenge here. How did you eventually navigate through that language barrier?
So the language barrier caused me to fail. After 2 years, I tried my best, got tutoring and all of that. It still did not help me because I was so far behind. And so my parents, obviously, for their love of education, made it possible for me to travel out of Cameroon in search of a better education, which is what took me to Canada. So they really gave me a second chance in life. And I was not going to take it for granted. I don't know about you and your listeners. If anyone out there has ever gotten a second chance in life, you do not take it for granted. So when I went to Canada, I focused so much on education that I aced it. I totally aced it, got my diploma in dental therapy and ended up getting a job in Rankin Inlet, which is the Northwest Territories of Cameroon. Mm-hmm. But that experience, you can imagine, I was devastated because being a teacher's child, you're not really expected to fail in anything. You're from Africa as like me, and you know how we're looked upon when you're considered middle class, a teacher's child, you're not supposed to fail. So this was pretty much an embarrassment for my parents. Mm-hmm. So beside their love for education, they made sure that I was still going to be successful. I was the first child. supposed to finish education and probably help them with raising the rest of my siblings. So they made everything possible by selling a piece of property and some cattle to send me to Canada. So I was not going to disappoint my parents the second time. So
right.
I did
that's everything a huge sacrifice. In my power.
Yes. Yeah. Great sacrifice. So that's how I was able to make it through Canada. And I succeeded through the education, got a job, and ended up moving to the United States because I was not satisfied with just having a diploma and also the physical shock and all the other things. Because I felt like coming to DC, focusing on my education, I failed to embrace my Canadian brothers and sisters. So I missed out on social life.
Right.
Thinking that coming to the DC area, I was going to see people that look like me and I would also like it there. But I was met with other challenges as well.
Right. So so your first cultural shock was actually in Canada.
Yes.
So I know. So how would you define this cultural shock? And then what is your initial awareness in Canada versus what you experience in America?
So my cultural shock in Canada. So now, and I don't want your viewers to think that I am being insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up in Africa, we have this mindset of a white man's country, right? When
right.
you think of going abroad,
mm-hmm.
we use the phrase the white man country, and we think of this grandiose environment. Mm-hmm. Everything is blossoming and everything is beautiful. You don't expect to see anything that is less... what is the right word? Less developed. Let me use
yes.
call it for lack of a better word, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So arriving Saskatoon at the airport, in my mind, coming from the rural village in my village in Salt, I honestly never expected to even see a tree.
Right.
And of a
because
sudden,
you didn't see that in the movies. Most of the foreign movies you saw, everything was perfect.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. Exactly. So I get out of the airport and I see the trees. And the first question is, oh, is this the white man's country? So that was my first shock. That was like that moment, like, oh, this environment. There is something that I recognize. There's trees and there's trees in my country. Yeah, the roads are probably a little more developed than in my village. But that was the first thing, like, oh, the white man country has trees too. You know, but that is the one of the things.
Right.
And then the second thing I realized when I actually moved to Rankin Inlet, it was even some of the things were more less developed than where I actually come from in uh-huh. terms of, you know, what we call back home latrines, the
yeah.
pit toilets.
Yes.
And I'm like, in the white man's country, we have pit toilets too. You know, so I'm like, wow. Don't let what you see on social media and the media really fool you. You know, it's like what the media shows about Africa is not really always true.
Yes.
So these are some of the things that we really need conversations and the awareness to talk about and exchanging knowledge and lived experiences to mm-hmm. understand our backgrounds and where we truly come from. Because mm-hmm. media don't always give us the honest truth about who we are and where we come from.
Yes.
So whether we're developed or not, there is beauty and inadequacies in everywhere we come from.
Right.
So that was my experience in Canada. And that was really a culture shock for me. And of course, the physical part came with the weather.
Right. So you're very cold over there. So
yeah.
At this point, when you're in Canada, did you have any form of strategy or you developed a strategy on survivor along the way? And also taking it to when you transitioned to the United States at that point in time, were you better prepared for the United States and what to expect?
Well, coming to the U.S., I was better prepared. However, in Canada, I had to develop a strong mindset. Why? Because like I told you earlier,
mm-hmm.
there was no way I could afford to fail.
Okay.
Because my parents having to put money out of pocket to sponsor me abroad was no joke.
Yes.
And sometimes you have to think of where you come from, your roots and your foundation. My parents taking money out of pocket to pay cash abroad, internationally, was no joke. That means they're taking out of the family's pocket. That means my siblings are probably not getting what they should get. They're also paying Catholic education for my siblings in boarding schools back home to give us the best. So I could not take that lying down. Because one of the things we fail to realize is when you're out there doing something, you have to put the mindset, who are you? What are your values and beliefs? Where do you come from? Because it matters. You just don't think about yourself and be greedy and selfish. You have to think of what is going to be your ultimate outcome. What is that dream? What's that North Star? What you're shooting for? And how does that ultimately affect your family and your community? Because if I went there and just be extravagant, okay, they've sent me abroad, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. How is it going to benefit my siblings? How is it going to benefit my parents? I had to be very strategic. Yes, I'm not happy with the weather. Yes, I may feel like, okay, I have this anxiety. Is it worth it? Because that culture shock made me go through several emotions. Is it worth it? I felt sometimes lonely. I doubted my strength, my resolve. Are these dreams really worth fighting for it? I had lack of sleep because I was anxious, right?
Yes.
And struggling to focus. However, these are all normal feelings because you're going through something, but developing that growth mindset is what mattered. And I think I share in the book about believing in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, which says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. So I had to find strategies that I had to hold on to, such as my 5P principles of success, which is my purpose, my passion, my patience, my persistence and perseverance, but also finding my support group, finding that prayer closet that I can go to and just pray and get myself back together. Whether I was calling my parents back home frequently to just chat with them, or calling my few group of friends that I had found in Canada to just talk with them. But it's reaching out to some community, reaching out to someone, or talking to your teachers, creating that network, somebody you can fall back on and having that plan just so you do not give up. But there's got to be a plan for you to survive and a strategy.
Right. Yes. So so you did mention the some of the tips and tricks that you suggested to ease things a little bit for people who are experiencing a cultural shock. Okay, so can we speak more about those ones, like making friends and emotional support? How imperative was that to you, and how do you encourage people to do that? I think the five that I picked out from your book were making friends, emotion, focus on the positive, and go through a happy place and learn to get around, and then have faith in yourself as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things that I realized with, I'm going to use the word either immigrant or foreign students, because I was one before, especially when I moved here to the United States as an international student or an I-20 student.
Yes.
There is always an international student office. And if you're so fortunate to be in a college or university where there's an international student office, please take advantage of it. Make sure you are registered in that office and you create relationships. Life is all about creating relationships. You don't want to be on a campus, or you don't want to be in a community where you have no one, or you're not relating to engaging with other folks. Because if you isolate yourself, you're already in a foreign environment. You're already in an environment that you don't know how to navigate your way around yet.
Yes.
Especially if you're just coming. So afford yourself that behavior or that attitude of engaging with other folks that have been there, have lived in the environment and know how to get around. So the first thing I recommend or suggest is make sure you register in your international student office and create that relationship, because it will go a long way. Then secondly, make sure that if there's student organizations, for example, when I was at Delaware State University, besides the International Student Office, there were international student organizations. And we would have you know, monthly or weekly meetings. And mm-hmm. back then, the university president always hosted international students in his home. Once mm-hmm. a while, they would have dinner for international students. Be a part of that. Because right. if you're not, then you won't know what's happening on the university campus. You won't know when they're doing some things for the international student or immigrant students. Mm-hmm. I hosted an annual day of cultural heritage celebration. It started in the nursing department in 2013 all the way to 2016 when I retired from Dell State or left Dell State when I quit my job. So that afforded us the flexibility or the opportunity to really mingle with students and faculty, got to know each other's a culture from clothing to music to food. And that quickly went from just a departmental event to campus-wide, and then it blossomed into a community-wide. And that's actually how my company, eUnity Solutions, got birth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I decided in the moment that I realized change needed to come. So I said, well, I would be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. So I created this platform to allow leaders to come together, thought leaders to come together and share strategies and tools on how we can really build inclusive workplace culture. And that's how I created eUnity Solutions, because I saw what it had done for our students and faculty, engaging with one another, building that camaraderie, and really how everybody was just so happy sharing food over music. Because when we have food and music, the conversation changes.
Yes. And it's very impressive that you did that, because I always seen a lot of international students at times. Well, I was one also before, during holidays like Thanksgiving. We are liking where to go, because even holidays. So such events actually are very helpful to international students. Thank you for that work that you've done for through your company, eUnity.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned about keeping a positive mindset. Mm-hmm. We are our own worst enemies. If you do not have a positive mindset, life is life. Life has challenges. Whether we like it or not, you plan and the opposite happens, right? So yes. If you don't have that positive mindset, you can very easily listen to those negative voices in your head and do the opposite. So it's very important not only to keep a growth mindset, but think positive. Have faith in yourself and believe in you. Believe that you have the potential. Believe that you can do it and just execute it regardless of the challenges. But most importantly, exercise patience. Sometimes we want a get quick rich scheme, or we want to just run so fast because we mm-hmm. see people mm-hmm. succeeding, especially nowadays with the social media. What yes. you see on social media, people just want to get to where others have gotten, but you don't know what valleys they have been to before yes. they have achieved success. Be patient. Mm-hmm. Your schedule is not another person's schedule. Your map that God had created for you is not the other person's map. Take your time. Just keep strategizing and re-strategizing until it is your time. The important thing is that you stay determined, you put the work, and your success and victory will come at its own time. The only thing is that you should not give up. Because if you give up, that victory is not going to come. You just have to be patient through your strategies and re-strategizing when things don't fall in place. But if you keep looking at others and saying, oh, why am I not at point X when the other person is at, you're not going to succeed. Stay focused on your own lane, and the other person will stay at their lane, because the two of you have very unique skill sets, and no yes. other person is set to be achieve your goals at the same time. So yes. you just have to have patience, but be passionate about what you do. Don't try to do something just because somebody else is doing it.
Yeah, that's a very laudable point, because I know you even referenced a quote by the late former United States Secretary of State General, Colin Powell. And the quote was, "Success is the result of perfection, hard work, learning from failure, loyalty, and persistence." Absolutely. I think you just hit the nail right on the head on that one. So now you've already migrated to the United States, and then in the USA, you actually met your better half in the United States. So now, what was your journey like going through all the adversities and actually getting? Obtaining your PhD, okay, being a mother and then also a student and international student as well, with the challenges that come with it.
That you see me laughing, right? That is a great question. Yeah. And I laugh because this book, this mm-hmm. cultural awareness came as a result of one of the challenges during my doctoral studies. That yeah. is how this book actually was birthed. So during my doctoral studies, I was still at Delaware State University. I had completed chapters 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. And chapter 3 is methodology. That is exactly how you're going to collect your data, your research process, and all of that, right?
Yes.
So you go through your IRB process, and I had obtained the approval for my data collection through that IRB process. Mm-hmm. So the institute where I was supposed to collect my data, the chairperson then at some point decided that I could not use that particular institute for reasons that she was concerned about the Hawthorne effect. She said I could not use those sample of students because of the possible Hawthorne effect. So I then had to change course and get a total new school and new IRB approval. So that would take me 1 year out again in my program. I was totally devastated. And as a result, that 1 year that I was going to sit out because I had completed my coursework, I had nothing to do. Mm-hmm. And the frustration took over me. And I said, you know, instead of being frustrated, I needed to do something of value. And I said, well, this is time for me to put my story in a book. And I felt that this was the more appropriate thing to do, documenting my journey from Cameroon, because this was yet another challenge in my life. So that's how this book came about. I documented this just so to share about the story. And also what I reflected on that came to me was, I have gone through these challenges, but I realized that my 5 P's had been what had brought me all along to this point. And again, I really depended on those 5 P's to survive this challenge. But mm-hmm. now in hindsight, I thank God that she put me through that, because I love sharing the story about this book. But most importantly, my doctoral dissertation was far more better and gave me better results than what I would have gotten if I had gone with that initial institution. So I was really happy, and that's how this book came about.
Yeah. And then you met your husband through, in your book, did you mention, was it through, you got introduced to a cousin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I actually came from Canada visiting with my cousin, and I met him at my cousin's, his cousin is a friend to my cousin.
Okay.
So we met at a Christmas party in Baltimore.
Yeah, because you did speak of how instrumental he was in helping you settle in the United, which is very impressive, working as Absolutely. A team. Yes. So, Doctor, I know you are a woman of faith. You're a Catholic. So when you came to the diaspora, Canada, United States, in your book, your dream was becoming a teacher, because it was driven by what your father actually inculcated in you after him being a teacher for 50 years. Okay. However, the scope changed, or I would say the scope was added to it, because not only did you want to teach and empower people, but now you had the opportunity to help others by writing the books and the things that you did in the community. That's one of the reasons you are on this platform, because you have an uplifting story and encouraging people. Do you believe that God presents opportunity in our lives? How do you deal with opportunities presented to you, but seem not to fit within your picture of things. And I ask that because all you wanted to be is a teacher. But along the line, there were opportunities that God presented in your life that was not part of your original scope, but you had to embrace it and help people in the community. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
That's a great question. If I were to reflect back on my journey, that's a very interesting question. Yes, I wanted to be a teacher. And I remember that vividly saying, are you sure you want to be a teacher? Because I used to see all these kids come home and help us at the house. You know, when you're a teacher back home, you're this glorified person, right? Very highly respected back home. Yes. I would say more than in this country. And so I always, always wanted to be a teacher. And Dad said, are you sure back home? I said, yes, Daddy. But with my journey coming across, it didn't happen until much later through nursing. And so when it did not happen, I probably saw that as failure back then. But with everything that I have said so far, you can clearly see that God took me through the channels, but ultimately ended up teaching in another capacity, maybe not what I thought I would be initially, but God still took me through the channels in everything that I have enjoyed. Because when I left Cameroon, becoming a dental therapist, I still did some kind of education, right, at the bedside doing dental work, because you're still teaching people how to clean their teeth, what to do, what not to do. Mm-hmm. Then from there, coming here, I ended up in nursing, which I would do a million times over, because I have totally enjoyed that and have a terminal degree in nursing, and ended up teaching in nursing for 13 years, ended up opening my first business, Always Care Health Services, where I educated over 200 CNAs. More than 75% of them today are nurses.
Right.
And I get so much joy in the community seeing them call me Dr. G, Dr. G. And they are big nurses in the community. Mm-hmm. So I really feel that God really positioned me in every way. And this is where we say failure is not the end of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Failure is just a stepping stone to what you were predestined to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just embrace it. But look at what lesson you can take from that failure to better your future self.
Yes.
What is that lesson? What is that message that God is trying to tell you? Because sometimes we get so involved in the disappointment that we forget to see or hear the message. Because it is in that moment that there's a message God is trying to send you. God is trying to deliver for you to take and move on to your next opportunity. There's always an opportunity in a failure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And one thing that I took to heart that you said in your book was, you said, a blessing isn't a blessing until you help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that really I took into heart. And when I look at the world right now, do you think the world is a loving place, or people are just self-centered about acquiring just from themselves and not really caring for the needy?
Oh, boy. In the current situation we have right now, we are all human.
Mm.
I think that personally, I'm still hopeful. Because I hope that we can get to a point where we can still really love our neighbors as we love ourselves.
Yeah.
However, we are in a climate right now. If we were to check the pulse of our environment and our community, especially in the great United States of America right now, some people with the rhetoric and the preaching that's going on, or maybe the political climate right now, have caused people to really hate their neighbors for no good reason.
Mm-hmm.
However, let us pray that things can normalize and people can be in places where they can learn to love one another again.
Absolutely. Because
I believe it's Kofi Annan who always said, you know, we are human first. We may come from different cultures. We may speak different languages and have different religions, but we are first of the human nature.
Yes.
And if we can just learn to embrace one another, we will do far more better and live more in more united spaces. So if we just learn to recognize that fact, that if we embrace our differences, we would be far more better than dividing ourselves.
Yes.
So I am very hopeful that we can still do that. The hatefulness is just beyond my understanding. Because when we come together, when we embrace each other, we do far better because we're stronger together.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I do agree. Yes. Dr. Eunice, you are not a stranger to working under pressure. When I read your book, you've overcome a lot of challenges working under pressure. But one thing I deduced was I have a sense of feeling that you saw opportunities or privileges when working under pressure. We are in a generation right now where there are a lot of people who choose comfort over pressure, even on jobs or projects. When the pressure is high, people tend to bounce, just take leave. What is your take on this?
That's a great question. And this is where the generational thing comes into play, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow. I do work well under pressure. I tend to believe that I am more productive under pressure than I'm not. But what you say is definitely something I have experienced. Some people tend to just shut down when they have a lot of pressure. But it all comes with your mindset. Mm-hmm. It really all comes with your mindset and how you have the environment you have grown in. You mentioned right. earlier about growing in a family of six and also a parent who is a teacher. We used to joke back in our house that we went to school three times a day. One in the actual classroom, one school at home, and then homework time. Because when you came home from school, that had separate school again. When you came home, there was blackboards all over the house. You had your school already assignment at home that you had to complete before completing your actual homework from school. So my siblings always said, oh boy, this is three school. You're going to school three times a day. And we had one sibling, the first boy in the family, who was just going to his room and locked and said, like, no, not again. This is too much, you know. Right. Yeah. So I'm used to that type of high level expectation, which now in my older days, I can sit back and say, oh, wow. This was intentional. And this has actually benefited me so much. But back then, I thought they were being so mean. Mm-hmm. But they really were teaching us high level expectations and how to be responsible citizens.
Right.
I see how it has benefited me in my work ethic and also how I excel in my own life. Because when I do something, I always want to give it more than 100% of what I accept to do. Right. So, yes, the simple answer is that I work very well under pressure, but it's all very individualized and how each person has grown and what expectations they have for themselves.
Yes. Yeah. And I believe you've pretty much drawn a template by writing the book, Cultural Awareness, a strategy that can influence your journey to success. For most people who migrate to Canada, United States, and some other countries, because you did have a quote which says, not all those who wander are lost. Obviously, you are one of the people who have gone through certain challenges or certain things, but learn out of it and then drew a roadmap, right? Mm-hmm. Because things do not always come with a roadmap for most people who come here, right, to the United States. So what message would you have for a new student, which you have already given, but on generally, on a high level, what message will you have for new students just coming into the country? I know you've given a lot of already on the tips and stuff like that, but some people do expect their just to elaborate. Some people, like in Africa, do go through certain agencies and they give them fake promises that everything will be on a greener side when they get over here and get actually that shock when they arrive.
Absolutely. Yes. No, I would like to say to whoever is listening, your audience, my brothers and sisters, fellow immigrants, arriving this country is not a piece of cake. It is not always going to be a bed of roses. There will be challenges, just like you have challenges wherever part of the world you come from. Just keep in mind, with everything else that we have given before, in addition to that, remember that life is always going to happen. Most importantly, stay focused. Have your goals. Your goals have to be written down. But like Mr. Coffey said, know that you may have goals for yourself. Those goals are not going to be met when you want to meet them. Mm-hmm. If there is a challenge and you derail from those goals, it is perfectly okay. Restrategize. Restrategize and put a plan B in place. You always have to have your fallback, plan. If plan A doesn't work, what is plan B? Secondly, have yourself a mentor. A mentor is someone who is going to guide you, who is going to help, you know, advise you and brainstorm with you, who may sometimes tell you what you don't necessarily want to hear because you're trying to do things in a way that may not best be suitable for where you're trying to go, but will give you the honest feedback. So try to have yourself a mentor. Third, put yourself within a community and group of friends who will uplift you, but who will not tear you down. There's a saying that you're the average of the five people you hang around with. You don't want to hang around people who will instead distract you from where you're going. Mm-hmm. It is very factual. You want to be around people that will be there for you when you most need them. People that will uplift you, people that will inspire you, people that will motivate you instead of pulling you down. You also do not want to share your goals out in public. It is a fact. When you tell your goals out to people in public, sometimes they will discourage you.
Right.
They will discourage you. So those goals also have to be written and made visible to you, something that you can always see and remind yourself. Your checklist. What is it that you need to do for goal one? How are you going to attain that goal? What are those little steps? So your long-term goal has to have short-term goals and steps to get to that short and long-term goal. And is that goal visible to you? And you're checking it frequently. You can put it in your on your bathroom mirror, something you check all the time. If you want to derail from it, it's right there, visible and clear, so you can see. And maybe have an accountability partner, somebody that you're bouncing things back and forth, but it has to be somebody that you trust. Mm-hmm. That would be my advice.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So going into, I know right now in this level of your career, you have won many accolades and honors, both locally and internationally, globally. One interesting one, and I think a very, very, very important one, you were honored for your commitment to service and community leadership with the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award by President Joe Biden in 2022, because you have contributed over 4,000 volunteer hours to community initiatives. This is very huge. How do you feel? Is this the most close to heart honor in your career?
To be honest with you, I feel humbled. I feel honored. But when I do some of these volunteer work, I really don't expect anything in return. So I was very, very humbled when I was approached about this. And I honestly cried about it, because when I do things in the community, I do it from the heart. So for this to be recognized and honored with this Lifetime Achievement Award, it was quite humbling and my heart was full. So going out in the community, and this, I've done so much in the community, from co-founding the Delaware Black Nurses Association, National Chapter of the Black Nurses Association, back when I was at Dell State, and we used to go out and do blood pressure screenings in the barber shops and in the community, from my own Caregiver Support Foundation, doing health awareness in the community and helping with so many other initiatives in the community. Was just very heartwarming and consoling. But I don't expect anything in return, because I'm just all about giving back to my community and helping our communities be the best it can be, and helping those who live within those communities. And again, going back to my saying that a blessing is not a blessing until you turn around and bless others, because I know where I have come from, I know where I'm going, and I could not be where I am today if others did not invest time and their expertise on me. And I always think of one of my mentors, late Dr. Bernardine Lacey, who used to be my former chair at Delaware State University, my mentors such as Dr. Saunders, people that, and Dr. Watkins, people that have been long-term nurses, social workers that poured their hearts on me to become who I am today. So I can only give back to the community because they taught me better. So I am very honored by that award and so many other awards that I have received in my career path that I look at them, but I receive them in, you know, in honor of everyone that partners with me, that work along me. And I'm just elated and honored to have been given that award in recognition of my service.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, what is next for you on your journey? And finally, for our listeners, how can they connect with your work or you on empowering Africans and people of Afro origin? Do you have any social media platforms or profiles? Yes,
sure, I do. Before I talk about my social media platforms, you asked what is next. The immediate next thing is we are actually hosting, I'm rebranding my diversity, equity, and inclusion conferences. So we're now calling it Inclusive Cultural Leadership Summit. And we have our first virtual event coming up October 25th and 26th from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So I invite each and every one of you to join us on October 25th and 26th for that event. We have a phenomenal lineup of speakers to share insightful keynote speeches, engaging presentations, and also phenomenal breakout sessions where you get to share your insights as well and be a part of those conversations so together we can build inclusive futures together. So please come out, get your early bird tickets, and join us. So for my social media platforms, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and TikTok as well. And our website is www.eunitysolutions.com.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Dr. Eunice. And also, I just want to thank you for making time and sharing your great and inspiring stories and accomplishments on this platform. I believe it will definitely go a long way to uplift people's countenance. It was absolutely an honor and pleasure to have you as my special guest on this podcast today. I would like to end with a quote from your book by Maya Angelou. I refuse to allow any man-made differences separate me from any other human beings. I hope to bring you back soon to this platform to discuss your presentation, especially as your presentation, The Destructive Impact of Stereotypes on Black and Immigrant Healthcare Professionals, or the discussion on any of your other books, because I believe you do have more to give to our audience, from your portfolio.
Absolutely. It will be an honor to do that. And yes. That article was just published in the Southern African Times. It's an opinion article I published in Southern African Times.
Yes, I saw that. And thank you. It was very impactful to me. And I think it's worth propagating that message out there. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So to our listeners, a big thank you. Once again, for staying tuned with us, we hope you enjoy this episode on the Uplift Chronicles. And please leave us your feedback on our social media platforms. We are on Apple Podcasts and other platforms as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. I hope you found inspiration in today's stories and the spirit of upliftment. Remember, every life has the power to inspire change, and every story is a thread in the rich tapestry of our shared heritage. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly subscribe and leave a review, and share it with someone who could use a little upliftment in their life. Follow us on social media for more updates and join the conversation. Until next time, keep uplifting and stay inspired. Signing off, this is Kofi Dake.